Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on Member-supported
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday,
May 25th, and you are listening to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And Nick is taking a well-deserved Saturday off to spend just family time. So you're stuck with us, too, to provide the news and entertainment. And again, excuse me. We'd like to encourage you to pick up the phones and give us a call, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. You got to understand, folks, in the studio here, we've got the numbers up on this one window, and they're in plastic, and the light hits it just right that I can't read the numbers clearly. I got to write those down. But, yeah, we encourage you folks to please, you know, pick up the phones. Give us a call if you got a particular computer question. We'll see what we can do as far as answering it. We won't all, you know, always have all the answers. Sometimes even our listeners provide us with a lot of good answers and feedback. But that's been the whole premise of this show for the past 33 years. That, you know, it's also our audience that makes it. We, you know, we like to encourage you folks to get in there, ask your questions, or we've had folks call in, hey, that last caller, he was having trouble doing this. I suggest that they try that, you know. So it's a great community that we have out there and have a lot of fun with it. But you got some of the news articles there, Steve?
Yeah. Right. There's a new program from Windows called Recall, which is Copilot plus PC. So Recall is a new AI-powered feature exclusive to Windows on ARM, which a lot of the newer PCs are using. It looks essentially like an eidetic memory presenting the user with what they have previously seen or done on the PC. So everything you've ever done on your PC across any application, website, document, or more will be saved basically by Recall, including all your passwords, addresses, health information. This timeline is essentially a sequence of snapshots, with each snapshot depicting what was on the screen at the point in time. So not just text, everything on the screen. Microsoft says Recall will be available with enhanced privacy controls, which will let the users decide what information Recall can capture, which is nice, but we've seen far too many situations where people don't know what these controls are, don't know how to set them, or really, you know,
Don't take time
to get to do it. Yeah, so you can imagine the criticism that's already been leveled at Microsoft for this new feature. However, it's not just critics that are coming after Microsoft over Recall. The UK's Information Commissions Officer (ICO) is investigating the new AI feature. Cyber experts have shared concerns about what bad actors such as hackers could do with that information. They can get so much information already. Your computer's going to spy on you even more now. And furthermore, because this feature works in the background around the clock, users may be unaware of what data is actually being collected and stored. We mere mortals may not have to worry about this for a while, however. The hardware requirements for these new PCs are so ludicrous that most of us can't run them anyway, or don't want to pay to be able to run it. According to Windows, Microsoft, the system will need a minimum of 16 gigs of RAM and 256 storage. And you'll want to double that at least, typical. And a Copilot Plus PC with the bare minimum of 256 SSD says Recall will take up about 25 gigabytes or 10% of your disk space in 3 months. So 20% in 6 months, 40% in a year.
Just a cumulative.
Yeah. But the biggest new requirement and the blocker for almost every PC in use today will be an integrated neural processing unit, or NPU. Microsoft requires an NPU with performance rated at 40 trillion operations per second, or TOPS. right now, that equipment can be only met by a single chip on the Windows PC system, and that's not even available yet. This is the Qualcomm Snapdragon X Elite and X Plus. launching on their new Surface in a couple of months. These chips are have an NPU capable of 45 TOPS, which is just a shade more than Microsoft's minimum requirement. As a note, Apple's M4 processor can do 38 TOPS. So it's ridiculous, you know, that they're developing a feature that computers won't be able to take off for a couple of years. And all these ARM PCs will at least be partially incompatible with the current Intel PCs. So you have to buy new copies of all of your software to run on ARM. We're seeing that now with Mac users that want to run Windows software. Mm-hmm. Most software doesn't run on ARM. It's designed for Intel, which that's what they expected. So that's hardly surprising. So a lot of the emulators and virtual machines for Mac have to do that translation on the fly. Fortunately for the Mac user, Apple already did all of that, so that the new ARM-based Macs that use Apple Silicon are compatible with the old Intel-based software. So Apple already has done a lot
They're
of that.
They're ahead for the of
Mac.
The curve.
Yeah. Copilot plus PC will be a new phase of the PC's development. Could also be that the Windows RT over again, Windows Real Time, was a flash in the pan that came and went and nobody noticed.
Yeah.
So our poll of the week is Microsoft Recall remembers everything. Everything. And our choices are, this is a security nightmare. Who doesn't trust Microsoft? I'll just keep my old PC then, thanks. And this is why I don't use Microsoft products. And with, I have to vote to see what our answers are, total are so far. So far we have 23 votes.
Okay.
And 43% is saying, this is why I don't use Microsoft products. 34%, this is a security nightmare. 13% is, I'll just keep my old PC, thanks. And 8% says, who doesn't trust Microsoft?
Yeah, but
now, that's not in quotes, so yeah. that's real. Who doesn't trust Microsoft?
But all the information that it'd be saving, like you say, people won't take the time to turn off a lot of these features. And if you get hacked, all the information that could just go out the window
is now all collected in one place.
Yeah, and they're
easier for the bad guys to get to.
Oh, that would be a logistic nightmare. You know, the encryption would have to be super tight for me to even consider something like that.
And so part of the reason I can see wanting to do this is, you know, what was that thing I talked about 6 months ago? Well, we already have that kind of in our web history and web browsers. You know, scrolling, I saw this thing on Facebook the other day, not, you know, 6 months ago. I can never get it back again. Part of the way the ephemeral nature of Facebook or Twitter and the other social networking sites, you almost never see the same meme again.
Yeah.
So you got to save it when you see it the first time. But so we already have trouble. What was that website I went to that had this thing? So you search your web history or you ask Google again and you don't remember how you asked for it the last time to get the same results this time. So having all this information already stored on your computer, it's still got to be indexed. You still got to remember how you got to it in the first place. Who's going to want? Now, I have installed programs like this on employee machines. Mm-hmm. As ordered by the boss to stop the employees from screwing off.
Yeah.
We've had to block
put
Facebook.
Blocks and that on, type of stuff on it. Yeah.
You're supposed to be working. You're not supposed to be on Facebook.
Well,
it doesn't say. You can just block stuff or you can save a screen snapshot every now and then to if you suspect your employees are goofing off.
Yeah.
But even that's a little rough to spy on employees.
Yeah, and especially since a lot of them, even still to this day, are still working from home.
Yeah.
You know?
If it's the company PC, and a lot of employees don't think about this too, it's the company PC, you're on company time. Yes, they can see anything they want to on that
and
computer
they
legally.
Have every right on it. They used to always slay me. You know, I'd go into work on some computers, you know, and you'd hear the employees say, well, this is my computer. I go,
nope.
Thinking, really? Did you really buy this one? But, you know, they just,
even the work
they're
from home
so possessive.
Even the work from home are often computers issued by the company.
Yep.
So you don't mix
even your, though they're putting it on, they get all up in a tizzy because they think, well, that's my computer. They don't have the right to look at that. Well, if you look at the agreement that you probably signed when you gave you that, it clearly states that, you know, they have the right to search that thing or, you know, take it back and do whatever they want because it's theirs, not yours. Just because they loaned it to you,
yep,
that's not, you know, ownership.
We had one time where someone had got caught playing solitaire all day long. So, and they kept trying to say, no, I'm not playing it all day long. It's just running in the background. So 5 minutes here and there. Yeah, I get a break, right? But then the whatever monitoring software they were using could calculate CPU usage as well as time running, and the CPU usage was too high. So so then he renamed it Microsoft Word.exe. To be sneaky.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go to the phone. We got Will down in the, what is it, Virginia?
Yes, Hampton, Virginia.
Yeah. Okay. How you doing, Will?
Doing great, Dave. How you guys doing?
Still this side of the dirt.
That's a good thing, always. And my remarks actually kind of dovetail on the news item, and it's something that you guys have continually reiterated, just switch to Linux. I've been pleasantly surprised by the number of Linux adopters that are out there on desktop and laptop. It's Linux still has only something like between a 1 and 5% market share of desktops and laptops in the world, but it's steadily increasing. I mean, the state of Schleswig-Holstein in Germany, all 30,000 of their desktops are now on their in-house version of Linux. And the educational system in India has adopted Linux. I could go on and on. Yep. But that's just my.
Well, and a lot of that too is Microsoft's policies and costs.
Yeah.
And it's like every time a new Windows comes out, you almost have to buy a new PC because the requirements are so much higher.
And the other thing that we stated a while ago, Will, was, you know, like the school systems. What have they gone to? Chromebooks. Because the kids just need to open up certain apps, which, oh, within Chrome and Google, you know, you can have a word processor, you know, a spreadsheet, whatever you need, even a presentation application. So it's all there. Turn that
it's
off.
It's all there.
Yeah, so it's there, and it's easier for administrators to put these out there. They don't have to worry about spyware, malware, and everything else that they would have to with Windows.
That's right.
So, you know, there's other alternatives, and they're slowly catching on. It's a slow wave. And like I say, you know, I tell folks, hear me now, remember me later. I'll bet you within the next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see a bigger move to both Chromebooks and Linux. Because the different flavors are Linux, they're making it so easy to install it, make it look like whether you're using a Windows machine or a Mac, it's there. The same type of, you know, menu system and everything else, and the applications are there, and they're making it easier to install the software. Before, you had to use, you know, open up a terminal and do a lot of different commands. Well, with Debian and the rest of them, they're just making the packet so you can just click on it, and it'll install it for you, and it's there.
I've been also surprised by how forgiving Linux is. I mean, I thought there were several times that I thought I had damaged my kernel, but as long as I had a USB stick and a bootable copy of Zorin, I was good. I could just, you know, reboot the operating system back onto the laptop again.
Yeah. And the other thing is it runs on a lot less of a machine. You don't need all this big power that Windows is going to, you know, every time they come out with another version, they keep raising the bar. That, you know, they demand that much more.
Well, as you and I both know, they put a lot of this additional software that a lot of folks will never use on their machines. Some of it by the OEM, and some of it by Microsoft.
Bloatware,
crapware.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I wasn't going to say that. I was going to let you guys
We joke about that a little bit. At Microsoft, you get Solitaire, but that's kind of a mouse tutorial.
Yeah.
So how many people have you tried to teach, you know, click the OK button, and they don't know how to use the mouse even? Right-click on this, and they put the mouse farther to the right-hand side? But, So, all the extra stuff that a lot of the PC manufacturers stick on there, the trials of everything, because they're paying Microsoft to put it on there.
Mm-hmm. And all the other games, now you see usually on that sidebar, they've got the game controller and all these other apps on your list of, the menu that, you're not going to use. But Microsoft, it's got it on there, just in case. And again, all this other junk that, if you're just going to use it for work, you don't need that, all that other information taking up space.
No, you don't.
And that's why I love Revo Uninstaller, because I put that on a machine, and you can go in there, especially if you buy the paid version, and you can, because the non-paid version, you can do one item at a time. With the paid version, I can go through all my Windows programs and put a check next to the ones that I want to eliminate. Then I go up to the top with Revo and say, uninstall. And whether I have one or, say, 10 programs I want to get rid of, it'll sit there and do them all. And get rid of it all. That cleans up the registry. It cleans up the hard drive, so everything is running more efficiently.
I've been a happy camper with Zorin Core 16.3 for the last three or four years, I think. And before that, I actually got started on Ubuntu, but I got weak and wanted a more Windows-like aesthetic, so I went with Zorin.
Okay, it's doing the job for you. Like I say, and the other thing is, you don't worry about spyware, malware, and all that. And if there is a problem, usually it's fixed, and it'll automatically update overnight if you leave your machine on.
Usually the person that found the problem, fixes the code and submits it. Yep.
Yeah, so, they find any holes in it. That's why, for the most part, I won't say it's total, because, nothing is, forever. But as far as spyware and that, the folks don't want to spend their time trying to find a program that'll, get into Unix versus, say, Windows or Mac, because there's more of those out there that right now people leave them wide open, or they'll click on stuff, versus Linux machines.
Yep. Going back to the crap that comes on a lot of PCs. Mm-hmm. There's a program called PC Decrapifier. I was like, they called it TP for your PC. And I just posted a link to it. And then as I'm reading down the page, we've discontinued and it's no longer available. That should be at the top of the page.
Yeah.
So you can't. So PC Decrapifier is gone. I always love the name of the program.
Is there an alternative?
Well, Revo Uninstaller is probably the nearest one.
But
you have to know. A little is you have to know what you want to delete.
Yeah.
Because there was a classic case where there's a program called IMN, what is it? It was Internet Mail and News, IMNN.exe, in the early days of Windows. Nobody knew what it meant, so they deleted it. And that was the program that you read your mail with.
Mm.
Because it didn't say mail, it was IMNN, so, abbreviations.
Yeah.
So You look in Revo Uninstaller, you look on your process manager on Windows or Mac, you're going to see hundreds of things you don't recognize. Most of them are legitimate and are supposed to be there. They're just the background workings of the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing exactly what to remove can be dangerous.
That's why we also don't tell folks, and I mean you and I and Nick, not so much Nick, go into the registry and change stuff.
Yep.
Because Nick just sweats it just opening the case of the computer.
My computer right now, I have 655 processes running 2,800 threads.
Wow.
And some of that is I've got a multi-camera video.
Yeah, you've got a lot going on here.
But so much of that is just stuff. So every little piece of Unix, and since the Mac is based on Unix also, you've got all these little tiny programs that run in the background called daemons. Don't know why they picked that name. but so instead of having a giant megalithic program that does everything, they have a whole bunch of little programs that all work together.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those little programs is running there, and so you may not understand what, you know, NSURL SID means. I don't either, but it's in there.
Really don't need to.
Yeah, you don't need to, because so
that's above your pay grade.
Right.
I got to mention one other benefit of having adopted Linux, and then I'll just leave it at that. I've been bitten by the Python bug, and I've been taking as many YouTube courses as I can on Python. I'm really fascinated by it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, Nick's a big Python user, and, you know, he loves it. But, you know, that's mm-hmm. the thing. I think, like I said, between next 5 to 10 years, you're going to see more people going to Linux for the same reason. One, Windows is going to start charging more. Look, they're already trying to sneak in ads that you're going to start seeing in the next version, and you got to opt out of them.
More than there already are.
Yeah. While you're doing stuff. And, you know, they're like Nick was saying, you know, they're going to start charging for it. You don't own it. You're going to rent it. Just like all these other software packages where you pay a yearly fee. And I think that's coming down the road. But the other big thing is they keep raising the bar. They want more, you know, of the system, you know, control that, you know, they're going to have to, you know, raise the price of, you know, getting another machine because, you know, it demands more and more of what, you know, you want to do on it. And not everybody can just say, oh, okay, I'll go out and buy the latest and greatest machine. As we've said before, you don't go to the big box stores anymore and see all these computers just lining up there. You go to most places, and what do they have? Laptops, tablets, and phones.
And if it is a desktop, it's like a mini tower or a micro tower.
Yep.
The old giant towers of the past are pretty much gone. And we had a customer the other day. I was working on one of the bigger. I suppose it's a mini tower. It was only like 2 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
I open it up, and it's a laptop motherboard inside.
I wouldn't doubt it.
90% of the case was empty, but people are expecting that big tower.
Did kick butt.
Yeah, and so it probably made it easier for the manufacturer. You know, we have this one motherboard. We'll put it in a laptop case. We'll put it in a tower case.
Yeah.
And we don't have to have the small form factor case. We don't have to have the micro case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's doing the work.
Yep.
So, yeah, you're right. Well, you know, Linux is the way to go, and you're just ahead of the curve right now, my friend.
Loving every minute of it.
There
Great
you go.
Talk to you guys again.
Hey, you know we're here every Saturday, so, you know, pick up the phone and give us a buzz.
You bet.
Enjoy. Take care, my friend.
Saturday, fellas. All right. Bye.
And more of your computing devices are already based on Linux.
Mm-hmm.
The Mac is, iOS is, Android OS is.
Yep.
Even Windows has a Linux subsystem in there now.
They're getting up there to that slide of the curve, and all of a sudden then it's going to go on over.
Well, Microsoft's biggest problem is backward compatibility, that they are... They bend over backwards to make sure you can run your 20-year-old DOS program on your PC.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Where most of the other companies aren't like that. You know, on Apple, you get 8, maybe 10 years of upgrades of your OS, and then if you want something new, you may be forced to upgrade. In fact, we had a customer this morning. She just had the battery replaced in her laptop, and is going to get another 10 years out of this.
Yep.
I don't know about 10 years, but yeah.
Hey. Yep. All right, folks, that music tells me we got to take a short break. But, hey, like I said before, you know, don't be shy. Pick up the phones. Give us a call, 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And you're listening to Sound Bites on this Memorial weekend. We'll be back right away.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this Memorial Day session of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And again, we ask you folks to pick up the phones. Give us a call, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415 with your computer questions or anything else you got to comment here on this, like I say, Memorial Day weekend, which right now with the little rain we can use, certainly use that. It's getting a little dry out there. But going back to just for a moment, what we were talking about before, though, folks, excuse me, is Linux and Chrome. More and more folks, at least from what I'm seeing and the folks that are calling into the show, a lot more folks are trying out Linux. So if you have, say, like an old laptop or even an old, desktop unit, and it doesn't have a heck of a lot of memory in it, and then it's got a small hard drive on it, that's a perfect candidate to sit there and try loading Linux. And what a few folks have tried, which I know for a fact, is what they've done is they said, you know, well, I don't have all this other stuff, you know, to run two monitors and all that. Well, you don't have to have that. What you can do is pick up a simple, what they call AB switch.
Sometimes called a KVM.
Yeah.
Keyboard, video, mouse.
Yeah, and you can sit there and run two machines off of one monitor.
In fact, many monitors these days have two inputs. Quite often there's going to be a VGA for older computers and an HDMI for newer computers. And you can easily switch between your computers. And then you just need a second keyboard and mouse, which you may have. If you have a spare computer lying around, you probably have a spare keyboard and mouse lying around too, since most computers come with a second keyboard. And if you only have one computer, you can get a second hard drive. And you can partition your main drive to put Linux on it. But I always found that to be just a little bit risky, because if something goes wrong, you lose everything.
Yeah.
But you can get a second hard drive and easily install Linux on that on your main computer and then play with it in your playtime.
And you can slowly, you know, it's not having you take the quantum leap to go from Windows right on over to Linux and, you know, not know what you can do. It's an easy way of just hitting one button. And you can switch over to the other box and play around with it. You know, watch some more, on your Windows machine, watch some more videos, say, on how to install programs on Linux or find this program or do this. And I guarantee you there are literally hundreds of videos on how to change things and set things up in Linux that it makes it, you know, so easy to do. And like I said, more and more developers are making it so much easier to install the software, put it on a flash drive, because it doesn't take up, a heck of a lot of space. Yep. It runs more efficiently, and it looks a lot like whether you want it to look like a Windows machine or a Mac.
There's a couple of Linux versions that look a lot like Mac and a couple that look a lot like Windows, so there's less of a learning curve.
And that's the other thing, too. You know, by having this other machine, say you try one flavor of a Linux, it's okay. Well, just put another version on, say, you get a couple flash drives. And here's the other beauty of Linux. Is say I get three or four different Linux. I can put four different flavors on those four different flash drives. I can plug it into that computer or laptop that I have it boot, but I don't have to do an install.
Remember when we used to do this on CD, but then it was read-only and slow?
Yeah.
Flash drives are faster.
And you can load it into the system and try it out before installing. So you can, look around and see if this is the type of layout and features that you want in it. If it's not, all right, shut it down. Put another one in and try. Yep. So there you go. All right, let's go to the phones. We got Fred on the phone. Go ahead, Fred.
Hey, good information. I didn't realize I could run Linux from the flash drive itself. So that's news to me. But I've got actually a couple questions for you. One is a Linux OS question, the other is a phone question. I have a, well, I kind of go crazy, but I bought a refurbished laptop, and I bought a refurbished desktop. One is the Dell laptop and the HP Elite Desk desktop, and I put complete install, same flash drive I used to install Ubuntu 24.04 Linux. I put the same software on both. I have NPass on both, Money Dance on both, Chrome. I went to Chrome because it's easier for me to see my email and all my other Google.
Yep, a lot of folks do that.
Like keep. So I'm running the same everything as far as I can tell, and I've tried to look at them side by side. Same thing on both machines. But the only thing that I'm having trouble with, and I can work around it with a copy paste, but having NPass automatically autofill the fields when I go to autofill, the desktop version loads right up. As a matter of fact, some websites that I've gone back to several times doesn't even ask me if I want to put it in, and just puts it in and goes. So I've tried that with the laptop, and I keep getting an error. One, it doesn't automatically fill. If I right-click or I click on the icon that's on the toolbar for NPass, it goes to a page that says looking for the NPass app, which the NPass app is running. I can see it in the corner. And, you know, when it asks me to allow, I allow. And I keep getting a connection error on the laptop that I don't get on the desktop. And like I said, both use the same stick. I downloaded this identical from the identical places, the Chrome and the NPass, and I'm getting this error message. Like I said, I get around it by copy paste. The desktop works flawlessly. And I'm wondering if you guys got any. I know you both use all that software, so maybe you got a hint. Say one little thing I didn't click someplace that I missed.
I would say uninstall and reinstall NPass.
Yeah,
it sounds like the plugin to the browser didn't install properly.
Yeah, it's a hiccup or something.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give that a try this afternoon.
Because
so I guess the next question will be for my phone and. That used to work flawlessly, but since I don't know, I don't exactly when it changed, but not too long ago, when I log into a website that's got two-factor authentication, and it says it sent me a text message, when I go to look at the text message and copy down the number that they sent me and go back to the web page
to type it in,
it refreshes back to the beginning again. And it didn't used to do that.
On your phone?
On my phone. It goes back to the beginning sign-in page of whatever it is, whether it be one of two banks, a couple credit cards, all doing the same, behaving the same way, because at first I thought maybe it was just that particular site.
So,
but it goes back to the sign-in page.
Rather than signing you in.
Then they send me another text message or another notification, and I go to click yes, it's me on the notification, or I copy the number from the text message, and I go back to the website, and it refreshes back to the beginning of signing in.
I know on a lot of especially banking and credit card sites, there's a Remember Me button or Register This as a Private Account button.
Yeah, those are all set. I don't have the Remember Me because that just fills in the top, but I still have to go off page on the phone to look at the number they sent me. It never used to do that. Nothing has changed. I've had some of these banks for a decade or so.
Yeah, but no, NPass has did some recent updates.
Well, I don't know if this is anything with NPass. This just sounds like a standard text two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
And the way the phone is working, it sounds like, so you got to leave the web app to go to the text app to see the code. And then
correct.
When you go back to the web app, it refreshes the page.
Because usually,
over.
You know, it, on my phone, if I want to get back to that app, I can usually just hold down in the corner, and it shows me all the different apps that I have open.
And
I just slide over, tap on that one, and it reopens it, and then I can type in the number.
Is this Android phone or iPhone?
It's an Android phone, Samsung Galaxy A54 5G.
Generally, when you get a text, you should see a summary at the top of the screen, so you don't even have to leave the website. It shows you the text message, basically in a new window.
Sometimes I can do that if I do it very, very gently. But if I'm swiping too fast, it'll close the page to open.
Well, that's human error, and that's not the phone's fault.
But it sounds like the phone is refreshing the website.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to do that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the latest Android or One UI, I don't want to say feature.
You could try clearing your web cache. Maybe it's not able to cache that page, so it has to reload it.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt.
So clearing the web page,
the cache
in the
either in the browser settings itself or Android settings.
Yeah, I was gonna say Android settings.
Yeah,
not the drop down with the three little dots clearing the cache from that for the browser.
If you can do it there too.
Okay, well, I got some work to do then.
Give it a shot. Let us know.
All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You too, sir.
Bye.
So a lot of the different Android versions for the phones have different ways to clear the cache. If it's straight Android, you go into the System Settings app. And then I can even post this link. So how you clear your cache can depend on what version of Android your device is running. Yeah, there we are. Let me get back to my paste link page. Well, Dave is getting the next phone caller loaded up. All right. Are we ready?
Yep. Let's go back to the phones. We got Bill. Go ahead, Bill.
Good afternoon. There's an easier way to try Linux than buying gear and hard drives and such. There's a web page called DistroCA, and on that web page, you can try about 30 different Linux distributions, and it doesn't make any changes to your hard drive. You don't have to worry about messing up your login, but you get to play with these various distributions of Linux, and you can download software on it. It's very easy for somebody, you know, that really doesn't want to spend money and doesn't want to damage their machine.
That's
so
a good idea.
It's DistroCA. I know I mentioned it a couple times before, but I thought I'd bring it up again.
No.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I'll post that.
You just kind of, support what I said at the beginning of the show. And that's our listeners out there. You know, we are a huge committee. Granted, Nick, Steve, and I sit here in the studio, and, you know, we share with you the information that we've learned over all these years, but it's also our listeners that call in with helpful hints and tips to do it, because we can't know it all. I mean, we've got a good fair of knowledge underneath our belt, but it's our listeners also that contribute, like you just did, that help others, and that's what we are. We're a community that shares and helps everybody.
Yep. Yeah, so the DistroC will let you play with Linux in a browser, and then that can also help you decide which Linux to get.
Yep.
Before you then
try which flavor you want.
Before you download it and install it onto your machine either with an external drive or a flash drive.
Yep. No, cool, that's a good one. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
One thing they don't have on their list, they have a list of 50 Linuxes to try. They don't differentiate between any of them.
Oh, really? They don't by the labels like Cinnamon? Or?
Well, it's an alphabetic list, but okay. What's the difference between Antix Linux and Boussant Linux?
Oh, so there's no description?
Linux Mint, and yeah, no description of what it is or why it's just, here they all are.
It'd be handy, you know.
Yeah, so
if you're looking for a flavor that's more towards, say, Mac versus the ones that are towards Windows versus the ones that look like Linux.
What is it, DistroWatch, that talks about the different distributions and how each one is different?
That would be just helpful. Yeah. That, you know, you could have just the titles or titles and little back, you know, brief description.
Well, yeah. If you click on one of the releases, it tells you about it. So if I click on Linux Mint, you know, Mint is a popular and user friendly Linux based on Ubuntu. And so it's, you know, there's a bunch of different ones, different. So a lot of this is going to be overwhelming to a new user. So now that I'm on Linux, so I got 50 Linuxes. Now I'm on Linux Mint. I have 10 choices about what version to run. Okay, version 21, version 21.3, 21.2. Okay, now do I want to run the XFCE version, the Mate version, or the Cinnamon version? I don't know.
Both Nick and I both like the XCFF version. Yeah. I mean, it's
of Linux Mint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the Mint. Yep, the Mint one. But well, you see, yeah, you could go blind with all the different flavors and versions and everything else.
And it's because Linux is open source and what's the open license? GNU license.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone can make any version of Linux they want.
Yep.
As long as they publish the source code back again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, somebody wants a version of Linux that can do this one little thing. Okay, I'll write that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's free and open source code. So, you know, it's there for you to use and try. But again, that's where, you know, like that website, or like I was saying before, trying it on a, you know, your own machine where you can go at your own pace and play around with it. And if it doesn't work, oh, well, just throw in a different version and try that out and see, test drive that and see the different flavors even within that. Like Nick, Steve was just saying, you know, within each one, there's other flavors or sub-flavors, I should say, in each one of them.
And if you have an older machine, there's a different flavor to use that may not need the hardware requirements of a newer machine.
But still, in all, even the latest one will run on pretty low, compared to Windows.
Yep.
A lot less resources are needed to run even the latest and greatest of Linux.
Yeah. And the general consensus does seem to be that Linux Mint is the best choice for typical Windows users because it looks very similar, and it's an easier transition.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, too. You can also read the reviews, you know, and see what other people think, because that's one thing about the Linux community. They'll share, you know, and help each other out just like you'd expect, you know, because of the way, you know, like I say, if something got hacked or, you know, a problem with that, boom, it's, you know, patched usually right away. And I have it set because mine's always running. I just turn off the monitor and it's set for in the middle of the night while I'm sleeping. It does a reboot if it needs to update. So, you know, I turn the monitor back on and I don't know, you know, I don't have to know anything. It's just done it and it just runs flawlessly.
It very rarely has to reboot.
Yeah, no, it just, okay, adds these patches and that type of stuff and away you go.
I've had a Mac update waiting for the last week. to install because it wants to reboot. And I don't want to reboot yet. So last night I tried, okay, reboot tonight. But I forgot that my security camera software asks to quit. Are you sure you want to quit? So I came in this morning and it was stuck on. Are you sure you want to quit? Yeah. All right. So I quit today. I quit the security camera program and hopefully the update will install tonight.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing. You know, we get so complacent and setting stuff up in that, yep. You know, and we forget about, oh, shoot, forgot this or do that.
Yep. And you generally want to install updates. In fact, that leads us into a news story.
Yeah.
That
going right into it.
Yeah. Let me.
We got a couple of minutes before we take a break
here. That Google has detected its fourth Chrome zero-day attack, the fourth one in May. And so if you are using Chrome, update immediately. This is about to sound like deja vu all over again. But trust me, this is a new problem. So Google this week rolled out fixes to address a high-severity security flaw in the Chrome browser that has been exploited in the wild. And that's what makes it a zero day. It was found by being exploited. It wasn't found by a researcher. It was found by a bad guy. Vulnerability relates to the type of a type confusion bug, which is confusing, in the V8 JavaScript and WebAssembly engine, like so many others before it. The type confusion vulnerabilities occur when a program attempts to access a resource with an incompatible type. It can have serious consequences as it allows threat actors to perform out-of-band memory access, causing crashes, execute arbitrary code. So if a program is expecting a number and you give it a letter, things will crash. This development is the fourth zero-day that Google has patched this month alone. Google didn't disclose many additional details about the flaw, but it acknowledged that it is aware of the exploits exist in the wild. It's not clear if the shortcoming is a patch bypass for an earlier bug, which is also a type confusion bug in V8. With the latest fix, Google has resolved a total of 8 zero-day Chromes, zero-day events in Chrome this year. Users are recommended to always keep Chrome up to date, and most of the time, using Chromium-based browsers like Edge and Brave and Opera, they automatically update as well. But to finish the update in Chrome, you have to restart Chrome.
Yeah, and there's usually always, excuse me, in the upper right-hand corner, it'll say that it needs to update, restart.
Yep.
It'll relaunch it. And that's, you should do that. Just don't keep ignoring it, to get around it, or I can't be bothered. Yeah, no, you need to restart it and get it going, you know, with the latest and greatest update, because it could cause problems if you don't. And, I mean, they're giving you enough warning here. All right. That tells me we have wasted, I won't call it wasted, but hopefully learned a little bit in this past hour. But hey, wait, don't worry. Even though Nick's not here, we're just going to hang around, the two of us, and give you some more information in the next hour. So we hope, you know, you'll stick around. Give us a call at 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. For the second hour of Soundbites right here on Jazz 90.1. But hey, go ahead, get that bio break in, and you know, make it quick, because we'll be back in about 5 minutes with more great information right here on Soundbites.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
This is WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And Nick is taking a well-deserved Saturday off with some other personal items to do. So, you know, hey, we're in here taking your questions and having some fun with it on this Memorial weekend. Don't want you guys to forget about that. If you would, give us a call, 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415 with your computer questions or just other stuff that you want to talk about. Being a Memorial weekend, we're open to different topics. We've been talking about phones and Linux, and everything's fair game, I guess, for that world.
And we will be doing a lounge, Soundbites Lounge, tomorrow, 9 p.m. Eastern.
Explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, so on the Soundbites website, if you go there just after 9 on Sundays, most Sundays, there'll be a button to go to the Soundbites Lounge, which is basically a video chat hosted by Mastermind Lounge, a local video chat company.
Yep.
And basically the same sort of Soundbites. Nick and I are there answering questions. Dave pops in. Sometimes.
Depending on my schedule.
Yeah. But, yeah, we have a lot of fun doing it.
Work gets in the way.
Yep. You don't have to turn your camera on if you don't want to.
I'll admit it. I'm getting older and staying awake.
What was the meme I said? When I was little and I had a 9 o'clock bedtime, I couldn't wait to be an adult and go to bed whenever I wanted. Right. Turns out that's 9 o'clock.
My wife kids me about it. You know, we're sitting there watching TV, you know, and like you say, around 8:30 or so, all of a sudden, she'll go, "You want to watch this?"
Yeah.
She goes, "You're just snoring away." And I go, "Yeah, I couldn't last.
I'm resting my eyes."
Yeah. I'm watching the inside of my eyeballs.
Yeah.
But it happens. What was that last story?
Update Chrome because yeah,
definitely, folks. You know, here's the thing within Chrome. If you didn't know it, now Nick always kids me because of all the tabs that I have open on my Chrome browser.
Yeah,
I literally, I think for the most part, there's like maybe 15 of them. And you know, I can go ahead when Chrome sits there and says, "Oh, I want to restart." You know, your browser, and, you know, I don't have to worry about all those tabs that I have open will come back. And the trick of it is there is in Chrome, all you have to do is go over into the right-hand corner, and you'll see those stack of dots. And you click on that, and you go to Settings. Within Settings, on Startup, it'll show you all the tabs that are open currently. And you can move them around in that whatever order you want. And what I do is down to the very bottom of it with all those tabs open. So if I open up another one, you know, and I want to add it to my list, I go down to the bottom of the settings and it says, use this on startup.
So it restarts all of the tabs you
have
open.
So when I close and I don't have to do anything else, I just click use this on startup. So I can shut down my Chrome browser, open it back up, and all those tabs that I had open in the order that I had them will be there. So if there's something you're worried about, oh, I don't want to lose this because, you know, sometimes it's hard to, you know, we don't remember the website name or this or that and how we even got there. We were talking about this before. You know, sometimes you stumble upon a website and, oh, I got to, you know, either bookmark, you forget to bookmark it, or yeah, you're going to use it a lot. It's a nice feature to have that you can just restart it and it's there.
They all come back. There's also a command key, excuse me, Control Shift T on Windows and Command Shift T on Mac that will reopen the last closed tab.
Mm-hmm.
So if you accidentally close the wrong tab, which I do all the time. the wrong window is open and I hit the Command W to close it. No, that's it.
Bring it back.
So that will reopen the last closed tab.
So, but the bottom line is with these different breaches and everything else, you know, we're not 100% secure just because we use this or use that. If it suggests that you go ahead and update it, folks. They're trying to keep you protected so all of a sudden you don't lose all your information and all that. Because hackers, they make money. Before the old days, you know, when viruses came out, they'd go in there and just, take, you know, over your screen and put this warning up there and, you know, no big deal. Well, they didn't make money off of that.
Yep.
So what they did is hackers have turned around and rethought this, and they do little scripts that go out there, and when you're clicking on a site or whatever, it downloads this program. And in the background, it steals your email list.
At a minimum.
Yeah. that I'm used to.
It will look for a document called passwords.
Yeah.
Sometimes. A lot of people have a document called passwords.
And that's where, you know, you'll hear it, and we've heard it on this show many a time. I'm getting all these stupid emails from this person or that person or my friends. I know them. Why am I getting them? Because maybe they were hacked. And what the person did, you know, they weren't watching where they were going, and sure enough, their email was stolen.
So that's why it's important to know what a real update notice looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I just posted a link on how to update Chrome. Go to the three dots, and it'll tell you if there's an update waiting or if you have to restart to update. So one of the biggest threats on the internet these days are fake notices.
Yeah.
There's a fake update notice. Click here. You know, a fake text message from your bank. Click here.
Or you got a package waiting for
package waiting. You need to give us your tracking number. Well, if it's from the package company, they know your tracking number.
Yeah.
So it's very easy to get tricked by these fake messages.
Oh, and you'd swear up and down on a stack of Bibles that it was a legitimate site. It had all the logos and all the watermarks that they always had on it. Yeah, that's their job, to make it look like you wouldn't even think twice about clicking on it.
Right. So by knowing what the good message is supposed to look like, that can help you recognize the fake ones.
Mm-hmm.
We used to be able to say the bad grammar and bad spelling were a giveaway, but
they've gotten better.
Yeah, they're using AI now.
Yeah. And what I was getting to, though, folks, is what they're doing now is they're stealing your email address books, and then they turn around and sell it to spammers. Now they're making money. So there's profit now in them stealing your, you know, simple thing like email addresses.
Yeah, so then they can send an email to everyone in your address book. And because it came from you, so we used to say don't believe any message from someone you don't know. But now people you know are getting their addresses captured. And not always from a breach, just from, you know, email is not secure by nature. So it's easy for bad guys to buy mailing lists, and you get a message from someone you know that claims there's a problem, and you need to do this. There's, you know, some classic examples of the, you know, the I'm stuck in an airport and I got mugged and you need to send me money for a ticket home. And if it comes from someone you know, you're more likely to be tricked by it. But the return email address can easily be faked, just like a return postal mail address.
Mm-hmm.
You can put any address you want in that return section, and it doesn't matter to the sender.
Mm-mm.
But what you can do in your email program is if you point to depends on what email client you're using, but if you point to the name in the from line, it will often show you the email address that's really behind the name.
Yep.
And, you know, if it doesn't match the email address of the person you think it is, or if it's a message from PayPal claiming there's a problem in your account and it doesn't come from paypal.com, then that's a good indication it's fake.
Go right to, don't even click on that. Go to open up a separate window in the browser and type in PayPal and go to paypal.com and log in. and you can see all your information there. Don't rely on links.
There'll be notices of problems when you go to that page. So if the problem is real or not. And the horrible problem is that we had a customer that they got a message that Frontier was changing their mail servers.
Which is true.
They called Frontier and asked if it was true. Frontier said, yes, it's true. The specific email message they got was fake. They went to a fake Frontier page, put in their real password, and got their email compromised because it was a fake message about a thing that was really happening. So they did more than what most people would have done, but still the bad guys are getting so much better.
Prying on that, like you say, good information, true information, and they're turning it around to their benefit.
Yeah, don't click on the link in the message. If it's telling you to log into your account, go to the browser, click on your bookmark that you already have to get to your account the way you normally do.
Yep. All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We got Chuck on the phone. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hi, gentlemen. Will you take an eBay type question, or is that kind of out of your?
Yeah, we'll get.
What, try. Yeah,
give it a shot.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. I bought a laptop battery from a vendor on eBay. Mm-hmm. And got it, and it worked fine for a little while. Of course, you pass their 30-day window, and you put in a feedback that says, yep, thing works fine. After 6 months, the battery was to the point where the laptop wouldn't even recognize it. So I contacted the vendor. They won't talk to me. I figured, well, I can buy another battery and then just return this one, but they won't even let me make another purchase at their website. So I've since contacted eBay support, who's given me nothing but a runaround about their window being closed and you have to contact the seller, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of any other. At the minimum, I probably lost my 10, 20 bucks, whatever it was, for the battery.
Yeah.
But at a minimum, I'd like to do, and apparently I can't even do this, my feedback has been removed, and I can't even get on their site to tell other people that, hey, you got to watch these folks because you're going to get a battery that lasts just long enough, and then it's going to die.
To the expiration date.
That's becoming a big problem on eBay, Amazon, you know, even Walmart that take third-party resellers.
They're selling junk that's just good enough to pass the window, and then it's crashed.
And so they may have your email address blocked or your IP address blocked. So if you make up a new email address and then go to a coffee shop, you may be able to
go
back into that site.
Just open up another Google email address, and you're saying, go to a coffee shop somewhere else. Where the IP address is going to be different. Yeah.
But that doesn't always work.
Yeah.
We've talked about the fake flash drive problem on Amazon, where people have sent in proof that the flash drives are fake. You buy a 1 terabyte flash drive, and it's really only 16 megs. And Amazon removes the bad review because there's 5,000 good reviews, so yours must be wrong.
That's kind of where I'm at, and I can't even get back there. And if you look at their feedback profile, it's like 99%. So everybody else thinks, these guys are good. Yeah.
That's part of the problem is you can't rely on feedback anymore because you can buy good reviews. You can also buy bad reviews for your competitors. But if someone legitimately has a problem and leaves a bad review, it's very easy for them to take the bad reviews down. There's no incentive for PayPal to get involved anymore because
they can't do anything about it. They got
their money, and you got your product. Was there a warranty specified on the product?
The warranty was the usual
30 days.
Yeah.
30-day, but 5-year warranty or a 3-year warranty through the manufacturer. So when I went to – when the thing kind of died, I went and looked, and – there was nothing on the battery. There was no label, no name, no nothing, other than the model number.
Refurb.
That might have been a red flag when you first got it, too.
Yeah, that's why I emailed them. I said, hey, where's the manufacturer's name so I can contact them? And then, of course, nobody gets back to you.
There's a real problem, especially in batteries, because they're a consumable item, that even legitimate companies will, you know, company goes out of business and I buy 1,000 laptops from them. I'm going to try to sell all those pieces because the pieces are worth more than the whole. And so this battery might already be 5 years old. I'm going to sell it. 30-day warranty, you know, $20. I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you're playing the numbers.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I pretty much try to buy new battery, but of course you don't know when you buy it from those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I wouldn't do it off of eBay.
I wouldn't buy anything on eBay assuming it's new.
Yeah, if you're looking for something reliable, I can almost guarantee most of the stuff like eBay is going to be used or refurbished.
Well, I did buy another new battery, OEM battery. That I installed works fine, had no problems with it.
Yeah, and you got probably a label on it.
How do you sort out the guys that are scamming everybody from the guys that are legitimate businesses?
But that's the whole trouble. Yeah. eBay is a wide open source for that. Yeah,
sometimes you can look at how long their account has existed.
Mm-hmm.
If they're only 6 months old, then a 1,000 reviews in 6 months it seems too good to be true.
That's another thing I won't do. If they've only sold 20 items, then I'm kind of suspicious.
Yeah. But like I say, you're better off, you know, if you want something reliable, I would not go to eBay for anything.
The only other recourse you might say would be to open another username, buy something from them, and then issue that feedback.
Yeah.
Because you can't leave feedback unless you buy something because of fake reviews.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd buy a little something and then let them know what went on with the other one.
Yep. Yeah.
But the only thing you could suggest would be to buy or to get another eBay profile and become another a new user, so to speak.
Yeah, that's about the only thing you can do to get back into that first person, but it probably won't do any good anyway, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Okay. And you even have to watch on – I get caught on Amazon all the time that this is a third-party seller – fulfilled by the third party. You can buy stuff on Amazon. If it's fulfilled by Amazon, you've got a much better recourse for products and returns than you do if it's not fulfilled
definitely.
Just because it's sold by Amazon doesn't mean anything.
That doesn't mean it is Amazon. Right?
But they're a little easier to, as far as getting stuff back, especially even with PayPal, too.
Well,
guys, I'm going to have to let you go. I'm in a parking lot, and it's raining like crazy, and I can barely hear you.
Okay, take care and stay safe.
The roof on my car is screaming at me.
All right, thank you. Yeah, we had an issue at our office where we bought a Seagate hard drive at an unbelievable price on Amazon, and now we know why it was an unbelievable price. It died 2 years later. But we go, great, it has a 5-year warranty on this hard drive. So we go back to Amazon, and they say, no, you have to go back to the original seller because it's you know, beyond the 90 days. So we go back to the original seller. We go to Seagate, and they say, no, that wasn't purchased from Seagate. You have to go to the original seller. And the original seller hasn't returned any of our calls because we didn't notice that it wasn't fulfilled by Amazon.
Mm.
Yep.
Okay, well. We still got a couple minutes. Let's go back to the phones and talk to our friend Steve. Go ahead, Steve.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm going to just go talk about something Steve mentioned earlier about looking at the link itself. I frequently read my email at night. Most of the stores are closed or banks for sure. But if you right-click on a link, one of the options is copy.
And you can paste that into like a notepad.
Notepad or something like that. And then you can see the exact address it's going back to.
Right.
And you can, as you say, you can look for gmail.com or something like that, something you know.
Right. So if your email program doesn't show you that link by pointing at it, or sometimes even right-clicking on it, there's a show link.
Yes, you got to go copy.
Copy.
But, you know, when they get to the at something.com or something.net, now that's actually where it's going.
Right. And a lot of times those links are also hard to read because it might be, you know, say paypal.com/a whole bunch of gobbledygook.co.
Yeah.
And you don't catchthat.co.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can usually, they make it so long that it goes past.
Right. That's why.
Scroll down to the right so far.
Pasting into Notepad can help with that too.
Yep.
So you want to look at everything before the slash. So there might be something.something.something/, and then everything after the slash almost doesn't matter, but it's everything before the slash. So if it's paypal.com.ru/, that's not really PayPal.
Yep.
Yeah. The Russia, I mean, the .ru gives it away. You're going to Russia.
Yeah.
So, you can do, even if you can't get a hold of the company, you can do research.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing. People taking the time and doing the due diligence. You know, so too many folks, as I've said for years, get click happy.
Yeah.
You know, they get in there, click.
Well, and the messages are written with this urgency, and something horrible is going to happen if you don't click right now.
Yeah.
And so now that we joke, the more dire and
sense of urgency.
And scary the message is, the more fake it is.
Oh, I got to. They're going to do this or they're going to do that. And they get in such a panic and get so worked up.
Yeah, click here or all your files are going to be deleted.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want that to happen. I better click there.
Yeah.
Yep.
They cause the anxiety, which is their main intent, to that you won't think about it. And you just figure you got, I got to quick react to this.
Panic you,
And you don't. Step back, take a breath, and rethink it.
And you can always call your credit card company. They're there 24/7, and every credit card I've ever called.
Call the number on the back of the card. Don't call the number in the message.
Yeah, I mean, even your banks, you know, if you got a question, don't click on the bank link. Pick up the phone. They still make them, and you can literally call the bank live and ask questions. You know what? They'll even look stuff up for free for you about your account.
Banks and the credit card companies have always been.
Oh, they'll bend over backwards and say, "Well, did you really make that charge?" And you know, they'll warn you.
Yeah.
Most of them, like I had my card compromised because they go, "Were you at Jersey Mike's?" And it was in Albany a couple hours ago. I go, "No, I'm here in Rochester."
Yeah.
Okay, because it was for like $78. And it's like, I'm here in Rochester. Okay, we just want to make sure we're closing that account down. We'll send you another card. I said, thank you.
I just had that happen, and I keep running into places I forgot I had my credit card saved. So my YouTube got canceled.
Yeah.
I was suspended for a day because I forgot that was the auto pay credit card.
Yeah, I had to go through and quick, when they did that, it's like, oh, shoot. Now my wife was helping make sure, all the things that I have automatically paid.
Yep.
You got to go in there and, like, even my tap and go. You got to go in and change the wallet. So
what spreadsheets are for.
Yeah.
And then they're out of date.
Yep. All right, my friend.
Yep.
All right. Thanks. Thank you very much. Don't go outside without an umbrella.
Okay.
You'll melt.
Have a good one.
Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, this weekend is the big rocket launch in Geneseo, and I'm hoping the storm isn't that far south, but from some of the weather maps, it looks like it is. So tomorrow and Monday, New York Power, if you like model rockets to giant big freaking rockets.
Come on down.
They'll be down there.
Yeah. Well, like you say, I think after today, rest of the weekend for Memorial Weekend is going to be okay. But hey, we got to take a quick break, but we will be back again with the last half hour of Sound Bites right here on Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Computer problems? Get answers from the experts. Soundbites, noon to 2 Saturdays, only on Jazz 90.1.
Hey, maybe we should tune into that.
I'm busy, though.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, welcome back, folks. I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And you are still listening to Soundbites. And I forgot who we have on the line. Go ahead, caller.
It's Rich from Arundquoit.
Yeah, thanks, Rich. I'm sorry.
Here also.
Yeah, we lost track there for a second, get Gavin away, and I forgot to write down your name. But go ahead, sir. What's your question?
That's okay. Question for Steve here. My wife has just purchased a new iPhone Pro 5, 15, whatever it is, the latest one, and has a bunch of pictures on it that she'd like to take off. We're planning a European trip, so she's going to take her phone with us and use it as her camera. So she wants to make as much space on the phone as she can. What's the best way to get your pictures off an iPhone, or how do you, where do you put them? Can you just download them by through the cable?
Yeah,
another machine.
Yep. So if you want to keep the pictures and just remove them from the phone, there's a couple of different settings. If you have iCloud Photo Library turned on, that will automatically sync the photos between your computer and your phone, Mac or Windows, through the iCloud service. What that does mean is if you delete them from the phone, they're deleted from your computer. So the first thing to check is to see if iCloud Photos is turned on. And if it is, then you may want to turn it off, because deleting from the phone is going to delete from the computer.
Okay.
If it's not already on, so if you take a picture now, does it automatically show up on her computer?
I'm not sure if
okay.
It does or not.
So if it does, then she's got iCloud Photos turned on. If it doesn't automatically come to the computer, then it's off. So then you would plug the phone into the computer with the charging cable. The computer sees it as a camera and will import all the photos. There's usually an option on the import to delete the photos after import. I generally don't turn that on just in case something goes wrong with the import. You don't want to delete the photos yet.
Right. Okay. So, like, do it twice.
Well, after they finish importing, then you can delete them on the phone. There's a select and delete option on the phone.
But you
can delete during the import as well.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So probably the best thing would be to hook it to a computer and just use it like I'm taking them off a hard drive and putting them onto the computer.
Right. Yep. Import them into your computer so you don't lose them. And then delete them from the
thumb drive or something to that respect.
Yeah, it depends on how the camera program is set up on the computer to import from a camera.
Okay. And then, but just don't do any switching of deleting them before I transfer them or that type of stuff.
Right. Yep. If she wants to keep them, you want to make sure they get moved somewhere else first.
Okay.
You can also use Google Photos or Amazon Photos. There's several other photo cloud services apps besides iCloud Photos, depending on whose environment you're in, so that you can sync your photos to their cloud. But again, it is a sync, so if you delete it from the phone, it deletes it from the cloud. So that's why everyone who syncs their photos, you have to be careful about that, because syncing does mean make them both the same. So deleting in one place will delete from another place.
Okay, so I have to watch what I'm doing or see what's selected on that transfer or exporting.
Yep.
Okay. All right, sounds good. I guess I'll play with it and see what happens.
All right, no problem.
Good luck.
All right, thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Kind of the side effect of that is that you never get a big enough phone.
No.
So if you think 128 is going to be enough, get a 256 gig.
Mm-hmm.
You know, double what you think you're going to need, because you'll fill that up too, especially
with
photos.
Well, that's what's nice is, you know, the phones that had the SD card.
For adding more, yep.
Yeah, you could put a SIM card in it and, you know, handle up to 256 gig, you know, in there, and you could take it out if it got full, because you'd sit there and And I remember back in the day, you could say, okay, save all my photos over to this SD card, and it would mount it.
Yep.
And put move all it over there so that you could have more room. But you can done away with that.
You can get up to a terabyte of storage in the new iPhone.
A terabyte,
yeah.
That sounds like a lot, but you know what? With nowadays, like you said, he was saying here he's going to Europe.
Yeah, you're
going
to,
and
a lot
he's
of
taking a phone to do the photos. You know, you're going to be click happy like crazy. Yep. And rightfully so.
I can easily take 1,000 pictures a day when I'm at some event.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe 20% of them are good. but you take as many as you can to get those good ones.
And we don't, you know, we don't care. Oh, no biggie. It's not like the old days when you had a camera
and
you only had 36 exposures, you know.
You had to pay for film and you had to pay for developing.
And you were more cautious on, like you said, taking a picture.
Nothing worse than getting a roll of film back from the developer where half of them were blurry, the other half had your thumb in the way, and they're
because nowadays, like you were just saying, though, you could take, one of your rocket launches.
Yeah.
You could sit there and, you know, boom, 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 take as many as you want, whereas if it was on a actual camera.
3, 2, 1 launch and I hit the shutter button and try
to get it.
I take 50 photos.
One shot.
Yeah, you get or it doesn't launch at all, and then you get 50 empty.
Oops!
So you always intend to go through and delete those later.
and
that's how you catch really good photos is by taking bursts.
And
most of the phones, you hold the shutter button down. In fact, most cameras. Period. You hold the shutter button down, and it takes pictures as fast as it can.
Yep.
So you'll catch
rapid succession of it. Yeah, and it's. It's great, but...
Because most of the time we don't think about taking a movie and then pull... So it's easier to take 100 photos and find one good photo than it is to shoot 5 minutes of video and then find one good still.
That was one thing I... Matter of fact, you just mentioned... I tried recording something, you know, a video on my phone. And because I had to... I was having problems with this one software. And they said, well, if you can create a video of it... And then send it to us.
The error message happens too fast and you can't see it?
No. I got it all done and I sent it to them. They said, we can't open it. It's private. I'm thinking, I checked the settings, you know, and.
Well, this is from your Android phone, right? From your Android phone?
Yeah.
There's been an issue in the Apple world that Apple switched to a different compression format called HEIF, the high efficiency. There's a high efficiency video and a high efficiency still. So you get more pictures at less size. But it does mean if I give you a HEIF video, you have to have a HEIF player. So on the iPhone, there's a setting called make compatible. So now you get standard JPEG. So do you remember what the file extension on that video was?
No.
Yeah, so it's probably the format of video it is. What they need to do is use VLC. The video player will open any video
format. What I did is I just wound up taking snapshots.
Yeah.
And sent them the snapshots with a description of what I was doing in each one.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, that'll help solve the problem on this particular
situation. You've got a pure Android, right? Not a...
I got the Pixel.
The Pixel, yeah. 6. So it was probably using Google's VP8 media codec.
Probably.
And so you need a VP8 reader at the other end,
which they VLC
does. But yeah, so that's probably why they couldn't open it, because it's not a standard, MOV file. So the wonderful thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from. H.263 has been a common standard for a while. H.264 is now a better one. Google's pushing VP8. Apple's been using HEIF. And so a lot of times you have to convert it to the other end. It has to know what they're using. Yeah, VLC is sort of the do-all, play-all, any type of video format that it can do. And if it can't find one...
I'm going to email them back and say, hey, try opening it up. Download the free program of VLC and see if you can open it that way. But like I said, I did take the other shots today.
And if you find a video that VLC can't open, send it to them, and they'll add it to the program.
Yeah, I've used VLC. Again, it avoids a lot of the hassle and everything else.
Yep.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We got another caller, Tim. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, hi, guys. I recently, back to what you guys were talking about earlier, I recently bought a new computer, and I found a video on YouTube that I trusted. There was a lot of subscribers and a lot of respect for this channel talking about what you can unload, all this junk, where that comes with a new computer. And when it came down to actually using something that was like Revo Installer, the guy in the video was saying it was a very similar program, to choose what to get rid of, I mean, I there was just very few things that I understood that I could safely remove. The vast bulk of it I was too afraid to touch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not as bad as it used to be.
Right.
Computers used to come full of crap.
Yeah.
You'd get a trial of Norton. You'd get a trial. And the only thing was you get a trial of Norton, you get a trial of McAfee.
And then they load it with all these games?
And you get a bunch of games.
Minesweeper.
The Microsoft Minesweeper and Solitaire, that was they're part of Windows. But you get like Candy Crush or Kingdom Defense, or there's Tower Defense game. And so a lot of that has stopped happening. So those companies used to pay the PC vendors to put that software on the PC, but there's been such a big backlash from consumers that that's not as common anymore. And the other problem is, you know, you get a trial of Norton on your computer that's for 30 days and then it expires and you started getting nagged about buying the program that you thought you already bought. As you say, you used to get people complaining to you all the time, you know, where does this program go?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was a trial. The trial expired.
Yeah.
So there isn't that much included, especially on name brand PCs anymore, that happens. But you're right that there's a lot of stuff in there that you don't necessarily know what it means.
Well, Microsoft, you know, is notorious for putting their 360 on there and giving you 90 days to try it. And that's where you know, a lot of folks were, oh, no, it was on there. It was working. You know, you got to get it back. No, you got to pay for it.
Yeah.
No, it came with the computer. Yeah, it came for a computer, it had 90 days on it.
As a trial, yep. But, a lot of times what you can do is Google the name of the thing, and that will often tell you what that thing is, and then that can help you decide if you want it or not, or if you need it or not.
Well, like I say, though, if you use, like, Revo Uninstaller, you know, and use that first tab, it'll show you the programs that are installed on your machine.
So you want to remove, say, Microsoft Word. You don't need to know the 30 other programs that are part of Word that have cryptic names and you don't know what it means.
Or
anyway,
if you don't want to use Edge, you know, it'll uninstall that for you. Or if you have other programs that you no longer use.
Yeah, that's sort of the biggest one. Because so much software is free or really cheap. Oh, that's neat, download. And then you got so much cruft in your computer that it starts slowing down.
Because
every program you install takes up some registry. And then when you either stop using the program and all that cruft is still there, or you delete the file, which doesn't necessarily uninstall
Windows,
the program.
Yeah, Windows Uninstaller doesn't uninstall it. All it does is in the registry, turn that 0 bit to, or the 1 bit to 0.
Yeah, this program is no longer available.
So it skips it when it's loading, but it's still got to go down through all those iterations that program put in. It doesn't remove it. It just turns off the bit.
And that's the thing, like with Microsoft, if it says Word, I know what that is, and I would use like Libre or something instead. But other Microsofts, I don't necessarily know what it is, and I would be way too concerned about
it. When in doubt, don't do it.
Yeah, okay. That's helpful, though, just do a search for what you're saying, and see if that's something that you would want. Okay, awesome. All right, thanks for your time, guys. Have a great weekend. Yep. Great holiday.
You too.
Yeah.
Yep. Bye-bye.
A lot of times those programs will tell you the manufacturer of the program, or not as much under Windows, but under Unix and Mac, it will tell you the user account that is using that program. So if it says system or root, then those are probably okay. But I just found one called text input switcher. Okay.
Right.
That's part of the operating system. So you can switch text inputs.
Well, that's...
but so I don't know what that is. I don't have to know what that is. But
that's why I would just say, you know, to most folks, if you don't know the name, look it up. Usually, you know, if you've got doubts about something, that's the beauty of Google search. You can, if it, even to file extensions, you can put in, what do files ending in this do? Or a particular program. You can Google it and it'll tell you. And if you're in doubt about it, leave it alone. Yeah. That's the last thing we want you to do is wind up messing up your machine, locking it up, or turning it into a brick because you deleted something.
Yeah. There's been classic examples where someone is looking for large files and because their hard drive is full. So they deleted the something called system.dn, is it? Whatever. It turns out that was the Windows registry file.
Well,
you don't use that, but Windows certainly does.
Yeah, and it's big. Yeah, it has to be because
that's
just
the
way
it
is. That's part of Windows. It's a monster like that.
So there's a lot of cleaning programs that will search your hard drive to let you delete large files. But make sure you know what those large files. Only look at your large files.
Yeah, and like documents and that type of stuff. You know, back them up or
Although documents are relatively small, so they don't take that much space on your drive. Photos and especially video. And what a lot of people don't necessarily realize is that if you sync your text messages to your phone and your computer, but especially your phone, because generally they have smaller storage drives, every picture and video you get is taking up space in your messages.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you save that picture in your photo album, now it's taking twice the space.
Yeah.
And most devices won't auto-delete old messages because you usually don't want them to.
Mm-hmm.
There's a setting on the Apple, I think it's 6 months or a year or something. Where's my phone? Oh, it's over there. It's like auto-delete after 30 days or a year.
Okay.
Well, I want to keep it longer than 30 days, but I don't need to keep it a year. How about 6 months? No, that's not an option. But you never know how far back you might want to go.
Yeah.
To see something. And then especially on the iPhone, when you look up the usage, there's this other line. It's not a document. It's not a home video. It's not a photo. It's other. And that's just everything else.
Well, photos and text and all that type of stuff is mostly pertinent to most folks.
Right.
You know, just like we preach all the time, you know, backup, because especially the photos.
Yeah,
can't say that enough.
You can always have another kid.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the first kid, there's hundreds of photos.
As you're 70 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
You could. Yeah, the first kid, there's thousands of photos of. The second, there's hundreds. The third, there's no documented evidence they exist.
Well, there's like that commercial, you know, your first kid, and they show them getting all this stuff together. Every kid after that, come on here, let's go. You know, they don't go as much because you've learned.
Speaking of hard drive size, I just noticed I have 600 megs free on my hard drive.
Oh.
Because I record the video here just in case something goes wrong there.
Yeah, no.
Let's be deleting this.
But, folks, especially, you know, right now in the holidays, you know, you're going to be busy taking family photos and all that. As you're doing get-togethers and that, again, take the time. Sure, you know, they might be backing up to this hard drive or here or there. Put them up to cloud storage. Cloud storage is so cheap now.
But be careful about it. You put it on the cloud and delete it from your computer, there's no backup. There's only one copy.
You need multiple copies. At least three different copies in three different locations.
The one on your computer, the one on a backup drive next to your computer, and say one in the cloud. Or another hard drive that you've taken off site somewhere. You swap it between home and work.
And because Steve and I have both run into it, I know for a fact that, you know, folks have come in to us and said, I need to get these pictures back. You know, they were of my great-great aunt. And I'll be devastated, you know, if we can't get them back. And it's like, well, I'm afraid you're going to be devastated because you didn't take the time to back them up. Doesn't, you know, make it any easier for us to get them back because it's just the way it is. You know, the system crashes, it crashes. And some of these data recovery companies, you know, yeah, you can send it off. You're going to spend hundreds of dollars.
Thousands sometimes.
Yeah. The key thing is try to get them back. It depends on how scrambled that hard drive is for them to get it back. And they just might, you know, you're going to spend this, you know, like Steve said, even up to thousands of dollars to try to get it back. They don't guarantee it. All they can guarantee is they're going to try their best. And you got to keep your fingers and toes and everything else crossed that they might be able to do it. So, you know, folks will say, well, I meant to, you know, do the backups. You know, I just didn't have the time. Well, then the only thing we could say back to them is evidently they weren't that important to you that you couldn't take a few minutes to do it, because you can set up routines.
Right. Most backup programs will happen automatically.
Yeah. They will automatically back it up. And it's just a matter of maybe shutting off the monitor and having it run, you know, at night while you're sleeping. Or if you're at dinner, you know, for the programs, you know, then there's photos that have just been added. You can sit there and run it at dinner time. Click on the backup and have it do it then. Because it can take at different points in time to double check if anything has changed and back it up there for you.
Yep.
But
we've had so many people that have come in that I meant to back up, or my backup is 6 months old. Or you look at the disk and it says waiting to complete first backup. Well, I've been backing up for 10 years. No, you haven't. You haven't looked at the error message.
Or the other one that you've talked about, too, is, you know, how they'll partition a drive.
Yeah.
And it's on the D drive.
Well, that's the same drive that just failed. If you're lucky, only one partition fails, but it's usually the whole drive. And and then there was the one poor guy that backed up the shortcuts.
Oh.
So he had a shortcut for Quicken on his desktop, and he
backed up all,
copied that onto CD. He brought in hundreds of CDs, and every one was a shortcut to the Quicken application, not even his document, because that's what he clicked on to get to his data file. So you never backed up, and so test your backups, make sure they work. But in his case, it worked. He put the CD in, he clicked on the Quicken icon, and it opened because it was a shortcut to the application. It wasn't his document.
Yeah, and it'll do it every time, you know.
So check your backup on another computer.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the other thing, to test it out once in a while. You know, you can go into your backups, few of these programs, you can go into it and say select one document and have it restore it. And it'll say, okay, where do you want me to restore it to? And you could have it restore it back to your desktop, right on your desktop, just to make sure that it's working.
Yeah.
And you can place that document back on your desktop, open it up, and there you go. So, you know, it's just verification and keeps you safe, a peace of mind. It just takes a few minutes. All right, folks, that wraps up another show for this Saturday. I hope you folks all have a safe and I don't know whether you're going to be very dry this weekend because they are predicting some rain, but hey.
And we want to remember all of the fallen heroes on this Memorial Day weekend.
That's what it's all about, folks. You know, I know it's the beginning of spring and the summer holidays and everything else, but take a moment to remember all the folks that gave their lives so that we can enjoy what we have now here in the U.S. So take a few moments to do that, and we'll see you again next Saturday, right here, same time, same channel. Be safe and have fun.